Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
President Obama spoke about the Middle East for 45 minutes yesterday. And on several occasions, you may have noticed, he tried to draw parallels between American revolutionaries and the uprisings in the Arab world.
The original revolutionaries, right.
There are times in the course of history when the actions of ordinary citizens spark movements for change because they speak to a longing for freedom that has been building up for years. In America, think of the defiance of those patriots in Boston who refused to pay taxes to a king, or the dignity of Rosa Parks as she sat courageously in her seat. So it was in Tunisia, as that vendor's act of desperation tapped into the frustration felt throughout the country.
Joining us now, David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. He also hosts The Washington Report on our sister station, WQXR, on Monday mornings. Good morning, David.
Morning, Celeste.
It seems like that particular comment that he made there is one of those that kind of speaks to the Ich bin ein Berliner moment that John was talking about yesterday. This attempt to sort of say we are different, but we're the same. Do you think he accomplished that?
Well, that certainly was what he was trying to do, but I think it went beyond that, Celeste, because I think the president has been sensitive to the charge that the White House has, by its own accounting, handled each one of these countries differently. You know, the U.S. has intervened in Libya. It has, until yesterday's speech, said very little about the crackdown in Bahrain. It shifted its position in Syria, moving from saying not very much to sanctioning President Assad the other day. So I think what he was trying to do was put some overarching American ethos to how the U.S. is handling these. And he came down very, very much on the side of values. He did not spend very much time discussing American interests in each of these countries. In fact, he never mentioned, say, Saudi Arabia, where obviously we have both oil interests and Iran interests as a nation. So I think what he was trying to do was say, look, over the long run, and that may be the critical word there, the U.S. is going to handle this in terms of backing those who back the principles of the United States.
All right, David Sanger, there were many people who are saying, look, we're just hoping that the speech tomorrow includes some specific, some concrete policy. And did we get that? And if so, what were the specific things that he gave that were specific enough that he can be held accountable for them?
Right. The main element that he talked about in terms of policy was beginning to get out and back Egypt and Tunisia and other countries that begin to edge toward democracy. The difficulty was he's trying to execute this policy in a time of extraordinary austerity. So what did the U.S. offer Egypt? About $1 billion in loan forgiveness, redirecting those loans to some other projects, and about $1 billion in additional loans. This in a country that has $35 billion in external debt and probably close to $190 billion in total debt. So it was sort of a drop in the bucket. But let's face it, we're in an era right now where Congress is not going to be terribly interested in using American taxpayer money to back the transition in the Middle East and North Africa. In fact, you've heard a lot of complaining just about what it costs to be doing the bombing of Gaddafi's forces as part of NATO.
David Sanger is with us, chief Washington correspondent for our partner in the New York Times. Your colleague David Kirkpatrick surveyed the Middle East reaction to this speech, and I'm wondering if the restrictions that Congress puts on the spending of money that you just described, if those were removed in some magical moment, what really would have been more persuasive would have been something on the order of a Marshall Plan for some of these Arab Spring governments inching towards democracy.
Well, it's an interesting question, John, and I think one of the lessons that the Obama administration learned from the Bush administration was don't go around talking about Marshall Plans. You may recall that it was President Bush who gave a speech down at General Marshall's alma mater in 2002, the Virginia Military Institute, and promised a Marshall Plan for Afghanistan. And the Afghans were then sort of looking up in the sky, waiting for the giant planes to show up full of cargo. And certainly Afghanistan was in much tougher shape than most of the states we're discussing here. That Marshall Plan never happened. And when we've pressed people in the Obama White House about whether or not they were discussing a Marshall Plan for the Middle East, they said, oh, no. Now, partly that's because several of these countries also are oil-rich, and those that are not, the administration says, should be getting support from the oil-rich countries like Saudi Arabia. I may have missed it, but I didn't hear the Saudis volunteering that yesterday.
No, and that was another thing that your colleague David Kirkpatrick mentioned as well, that the president specifically called out Yemen, Syria, and Bahrain in terms of repressive responses to their uprisings there, but made no mention of Saudi Arabia. That must have been intentional, David Sanger.
Well, he did not only did he not mention what's happening inside Saudi Arabia, he did not mention the Saudis coming over the causeway and putting their troops in Bahrain to put these down. The Saudis have been very clear. They have said no more regime changes caused by activity on the street. And, you know, they had opposed the U.S. Decision to pull the rug out from underneath Mubarak. They had opposed the decision in Libya. And they're not really in the mood right now to hear the president talk about the spread of American values through the region.
Well, I mean, were there things, though, David, that the president can be held accountable later? Was he specific enough that it could be like one of those Guantanamo promises where he says, I will close Guantanamo, and later is unable to bring about? Was he that specific?
You know, I think he was, in that at any moment now, if he in fact pulls his punches on Bahrain or any other place that might be a critical American ally, people can ask the question, so how is your action lining up with the principles that you set? And that's difficult.
Dave,
and I have to ask you guys one, since you asked at the beginning whether or not we thought that the world was going to end tomorrow. I wanted to know whether you're booking your show for Monday or not.
Oh, absolutely. We got to be. I mean, we got to have a plan B.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, well, we would not allow that. I mean, that would leave us, you know, undefended.
Plus, if it's the rapture, David Sanger, I assume there's going to be a bunch of people left behind, and we'll want to talk to them.
You have no idea how easy it is to book a show on the end of the world, David Sanger.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, also hosts The Washington Report for our sister station, WQXR, on Monday mornings. Thanks, David.
Thank you.